Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
That is just a fact of life.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history, Pedro Fernandez.
Woo, it's going to be good.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is WBC Boxing TV and Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Often imitated but hardly duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now, of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion and an award-winning boxing journalist. So straight up, supposedly, allegedly, I know a little bit about boxing. But guess what? If you know more, you think you know more, I invite you to tell the world. Open up the phone lines here, 1-800-878-7529. That's toll-free all around the world, 1-800-878-7529. You can text us here in the studio, the confidential, discreet, no-obligation text line, the number 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Well, JoJo Diaz was a winner last night. He is now a WBC champion, 135 pounds. I wish we had Mauricio Suleiman on the show so Mauricio could explain to me how there's so many WBC champions at 135 pounds. Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, and now this guy. Anyway, speaking of Ryan Garcia, everybody wants to fight Ryan now. Of course, Tank Davis, Gervonta Davis, victorious a fortnight ago at 140 pounds. He's calling out Ryan Garcia. Floyd Mayweather says that's the biggest fight going right now is, Ryan Garcia, the boy, the wonder kid. Of course, the king of Instagram and all that kind of good stuff, the social media phenomenon, and Tank Davis. Of course, Tank Davis looking good at 140 pounds, but looking small at 140. I mean, I'm not trying to say he's not where he's supposed to be, but he can win at 140, just probably not against Josh Taylor. That's my opinion. Hector says he can beat Josh Taylor. I don't think so. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Once again, the text line here in the studio, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Tower of power to the break. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Yeah, the way that you fare under all conditions, your mind.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
It's just an unusual situation. I mean, a young prize fighter has the whole world laying out in front of him, has planned for this moment for years, and when it comes, he's finding a hard time to deal with all the responsibility he may feel to these fans. And is it asking too much of a 21, 22-year-old to have to satisfy such a large fan base? It's an interesting question because he's not going to be the first one that builds a fan base through social media and then has to live up to it.
Larry Merchant, of course, on Ryan Garcia, the unbeaten lad out of Southern California, of course, unbeaten, 135 pounds. I think he was a rage. I think he was on the cusp of superstardom with other people like Hector and the boxing's PAC, Socrates Palmer. They say, hey, you're pushing it too far on Ryan Garcia. Okay. Anyway, Ryan Garcia's got his problems, but he's back training. Supposedly he's not having to take any medication or anything like that, which is sort of good because you really don't want, I don't want fighters taking anxiety medication or antidepressant medication because it just doesn't make them the same people. And you gotta be you in order to fight. In other words, I hope Ryan Garcia gets well to the point where he can come back in the ring real soon and fight guys like Devin Haney, the aforementioned, I want to mention JoJo Diaz. He was a winner last night. Of course, Southern California is from El Monte, California. He's now 32-1 with a draw of 15 KOs. He beat the trial horse, the guy that was Ryan Garcia was supposed to fight in July, and Javier Fortuna. Fortuna is now 36-3 with a draw and 25 KOs. I think he was a champion at two different weight classes, but, bottom line is Fortuna was the opponent. He came in last last night. He did his thing. He went 12 pounds. He went 12 rounds. This is 135 pounds for Jojo Diaz. Good luck on that one. He claims the WBC interim title. As I said, I'd love to get Mauricio on the show to find out what exactly is happening at 135 pounds. Of course, at 135 pounds, we have all kinds of guys. We have Tank Davis. He has a WBO. The WBA 140-pound crown, a WBA 135-pound crown, and I believe a WBA 130-pound crown. Three different weight classes right now, Gervonta Davis. I don't know which one he's going to continue to work in, but I'm probably thinking it's a heavier one because he probably doesn't want to lose the weight and get down to 135 pounds or 130 pounds. 130 pounds requires tremendous dedication as far as Gervonta Davis is concerned. And I don't know if Floyd can get that kind of course, Floyd Mayweather's running him, and Floyd thinks that he's the guy. Floyd's betting the house on him. Floyd's putting the house on him. I don't think he can make 130 pounds to be strong as far as can. Besides, there's no super big money fights at 130. The big fights are 135 pounds, and it seems like Floyd is moving him away from 135 pounds to 140 pounds. I mean, he took on the champion 140 pounds a couple weeks ago. Mr. Bradis, we didn't know a whole lot about him other than that he was trained, of course, across the bay by Virgil Hunter. And that's about it. I mean, he was the unbeaten champion, but that was about it. I mean, there was no accolades. There was no big press releases on this guy, anything like that. And, of course, Tank Davis goes in there and struggles the first three or four rounds and finds his groove, ends up getting a 10-7 round at one point in time. And, of course, I think stops the young man in the 10th or 11th round. At the end of the night, Davis still unbeaten, still the tank. But can he can't make 130, I don't think, anymore. 135, of course, there's all kinds of guys at 135. There's Devin Haney, of course, a kid from San Francisco, California, unbeaten now, 26 fights, coming off that win a couple weeks ago. He looked pretty good, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he had nice moves, and I thought he dropped some rust in the ring. There was a lot of rust dropping off him because he hasn't been too active. I mean, here's a young guy, although he started out like at the age of 16 or 17, fighting in Mexico and places like that. I kid you not. I mean, Devin Haney had a plan. He who fails to plan is planning to fail. Well, Devin Haney and his father, they weren't thinking about failure. You have to give them props. I mean, they bypassed the amateur program because for the most part, the amateur program is just like a pimping system. And what I mean by that is, You're striving for that one slot. The one slot is to get that gold medal. Well, there's like 400 guys, you know, in your weight class. Or used to be a lot of guys per weight class. Maybe not anymore with the almost death of amateur boxing here in the United States. But there used to be a lot of guys per weight class. I know when I was fighting at 130 pounds, I think we had 104 guys that were ranked. Ready to go into Western trials and Eastern Olympic trials, something like that. Started off with 100 guys, and it boiled down, of course, to the Olympic champions and who they were in 1984. Bad dudes, no doubt about it. But when you look at the status of amateur boxing here in the United States, I mean, I think Mauricio Sulaiman, the aforementioned WBC presidente, of course, the son of Jose Sulaiman, he said on a couple editions of Ring Talk Live Worldwide a couple months ago, he said that, you know, he's worried about the death of amateur boxing because where are you going to go? I mean, it would be like the death of AAA baseball. In other words, minor league baseball. I mean, what would we do? Where would we get our stars in baseball if we didn't have the minor leagues? Or if we didn't have college basketball for the NBA. In other words, you gotta have some type of breeding ground. Some place where they can get exposed, where they can grow, where they can expose themselves and but the bottom line is amateur boxing ain't happening that way anymore. I mean, 2004 with the Olympic gold medalist, of course, Mr. Andre Ward, the last gold medalist of the United States. And before that, I think it was Oscar De La Hoya, dated back to 1992. So let me get back. The kid won in Atlanta, 1996, David Reed. The kid with that bad eye. He had that really bad eye. That's where it ended his career a little bit early. But anyways, David Reed won a gold medal in 96. And then, of course, Andre Ward in 2004. But nobody's really been ringing bells as an amateur here in the United States because the amateur program is not funded. I mean, amateur boxing in the United States, before, it was funded by hunger. In other words, guys were hungry, so they went to the gym. And if they didn't want to do the amateur thing, a lot of guys are like, I'm going to turn pro and make a few dollars. And then some of those prospered to the point where are evolved to the point where they were, you know, fringe contenders and or champions. I mean, some guys can walk into a gym and become a champion. Yes, that is a possibility. Not too often, but it does happen on occasion. occasions. But here in the United States, I mean, think about this. 1976, that Olympic team, of course, Ray Leonard, Howard Davis. Howard Davis was the MVP. May he rest in peace. The Spinks brothers, Leo Randolph. I mean, I can go on. And then 84 with Mark Breland and Meldrick Taylor and Pernell Whitaker. Evander Holyfield had the controversial bronze. Tyrell Biggs had the gold. Okay. All these guys went on to make some money as pros. In other words, that amateur career springboarded them into the professional career. And right now, with no amateur program here in the United States because of the lack of funding, nobody wants to put together any money. They just don't. I mean, in the United Kingdom, Frank Warren put about $5 or $6 million in amateur boxing about 10, 12 years ago. Okay. And he got Ricky Burns and he got, you know, Amir Khan came out of that. And of course, Anthony Joshua, the reigning champion, and of course, three or four different sanctioned bodies, the heavyweight, but we know who the real world heavyweight champion is, of course, Tyson Fury. Speaking of Tyson Fury, I'll get to that after the break. Looks like 8 of the people in his camp tested positive for COVID. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but straight up, Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, looks like they're going to try to bypass that fight and go straight to the Anthony Joshua fight in early 2022. Sounds like a scam, but hey, it's boxing. You know, that's just the way it rolls. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside. Look into the world of boxing, MMA, of course, open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free no-commitment text line. That number? 415-275-1613. The number once again, 415-275-1613. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide in WBC Boxing TV, coming to you live on Twitch.tv, your Sports Byline USA channel. Check us out. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, but hey, you knew that.
Well, I'm on Ring Talk, and as you know, this is one of the first shows that got onto the internet. My friend Pedro is a true fighter in his own mind, I should say. But he really is. I seen him exercising the other day, getting ready for somebody. I don't know who it is, because everybody is taking shots at him, so I see him getting himself in good condition so that he can fire back. Never been one to say die, never been one to hide out. He comes on, damn near torpedoes, full steam ahead.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Good to see you're still alive. I think I like you.
The soul side of town, the mighty Tower of Power, some of their new sounds. Check them out, towerofpower.com. Of course, Don King, after the break there, of course, talking about me training at the Times Square Gym in New York City. I was getting ready for somebody. I wasn't sure who it was, but I was in prime shape back there. And Don said to me, "Don't you want to fight, Pedro?" You must be crazy. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA, of course. Fights happening last night. We'll get to a couple of them, but straight up, one of my favorite fighters. We're talking about Ciencias Estrada. She was a winner last night. Of course, she's a talented young lady from L.A. There's no doubt about it. She's like, got all the skills. She can talk a good game. She's sort of like Hector Camacho to an extent. She's 21-0 now, 8 knockouts. Beat a girl last night by the name of Tenkai Tasami, 99-91, basically 9-1 in rounds and 8-2 in rounds on the other scorecard, 98-92. That was for the WBO 108-pound crown. She held the 105-pound crown. And people say to me, what's the difference 3 pounds? There's a difference in size between 3 pounds at these lighter weights. That's why they have the different divisions. I kid you not. At 139, like I fought at 139 when the junior welterweight limit was 139. The difference between 139 and 147 was 8 pounds. It was massive. It was massive. You wouldn't believe it. I found out when I moved up to 147. Jesus Christ, these guys are huge. And of course, dropping down to 132, I'd been a big guy if I fought at 132, but didn't want to discipline myself to that extent. Wow. So Mrs. Estrada was the winner last night. Luis Perez shot me a text just now. Right now, he said he's watching the Hands of Stone movie about Roberto Duran. Of course, Roberto Duran lost his mother a fortnight ago, and you want to give him all kinds of props because, you know, he's 71 years old. Now, he's been through hell. I don't want to detail his health issues, and I've known some. He's had some health issues, this and that. So I don't want to go into that. But he's a trooper. He keeps going. And of course, I saw him a couple years ago when he was in Panama, and watching Roberto in front of his own. We were in the Hotel El Panama, which is the biggest hotel, the biggest, most noted hotel in Panama City. Okay, and of course, Roberto's gonna there with his band and with that tuxedo. He's got it going on, playing the timbales. And I mean, he was so happy within himself. He's had a wonderful evening. There's no doubt about it. And of course, that was the last time I saw him. He was in L.A. a few weeks ago. A few months ago, and then he was supposed to come back a few weeks ago, maybe do something as far as some television stuff with Julio Cesar Chavez, but evidently that's been put on hold. As far as an exhibition's concerned between him and Chavez, Duran's 71 years old, but yet he's still game. 7 years. He's still, I kid you not, he's game still. I kid you not, he's game. I mean, he said, yeah, okay, I'll do the exhibition. How many rounds? Oh, he's asking how many rounds. I mean, not whether he can make the weight, maybe get down to a certain weight, be in a certain shape. No. Roberto will be there. And of course, we're talking about Julio Cesar Chavez. Of course, he comes off that exhibition a fortnight ago with Hector Camacho Jr. Not my favorite guy. I mean, Camacho Sr. was my favorite guy. I even called my wife one time. Check this out. My wife doesn't want to let me talk to my daughter on the phone. I'm calling from Atlantic City on the phone. Like, and it's like, you know, really expensive for a long distance back then in the 90s. Anyway, so Hector Camacho hears that I'm fighting with her on the phone. Ah! So she hangs up the phone on me. So he calls her. He goes, I'll call her for you. I go, you're her favorite fighter. I didn't suggest it, but he heard it in the background. He goes, what's going on, man? I said, well, the old lady don't want to let me talk to the kid. She don't let me talk to the kid for a minute and this and that, blah, blah. I paid a bunch of money to call her on the phone, blah, blah. He goes, get her on the phone one more time. I'll call her. I said, okay, I'll talk to her. So Camacho calls and he says, hello, I'm looking for Olga. And she goes, this is Olga. And he goes, this is Hector. And she goes, what do you want? She thought it was Hector Martinez, my best friend. It turned out to be Hector Camacho, the Harlem Heckler, the Macho Man. He goes, hey, this is the Macho Man, Hector Camacho. And you hear those long pause at the end of the phone where she realized she's been embarrassed, okay? But that was just her. That was my ex-wife in true living colors, no doubt about that. But the Macho Man put her on the spot. And of course, I think the last time that I saw her, I talked to him a couple, maybe 2 or 3 years before he died on the phone, somebody gave me a phone number, a live phone number from a Florida area code, and I called him, and we didn't record anything. We just talked, and he seemed to be okay. But you can sort of hear the residual effects of professional boxing affecting the Macho Man, Hector Camacho. In fact, we'll maybe hear a clip a little bit later where he was talking about all the brothers in boxing. But, you know, he sounded punchy. He sounded like a cartoon. I mean, he was a little nasally like that, you know, and he seemed like a little bit slower in this and that. So, you know, the residual effects of professional boxing, think this back, he never got stopped. Never got stopped. All the 68 fights never got stopped, okay? Of course, one legitimate championships in a couple different weight classes before campaigning in other weight divisions, of course, and coming off that big win over Sugar Ray Leonard. When Ray Leonard went into that fight, of course, he and Ray, the battle of the legends, and Ray was destroyed in a few rounds, and Camacho just kept going, of course. But the residual effects of professional boxing and Colombian dust meaning cocaine, that was Camacho's downfall. It was just absolutely his downfall. I don't know. I told this story a few times on the air, and I think it came out in the recent movie on Hector Camacho, The Macho Man, or something like that on Showtime or Netflix. Netflix, I think, has got it. But he didn't want to come down for a fight. He was all coked out like a couple days before the fight and didn't want to come down for the fight or a press conference, something like that. And the TV officials were like freaking out. I mean, they're going on CBS. I think the CBS TV, they were freaking out. I mean, he's going to be their headliner. And he's having like a nervous breakdown or some type of drug issues or something like that. So don't want to come out of his room. And then, of course, we had that card in Carolina, Bayamón, Puerto Rico, and outside of San Juan. And that was, I think, 2001, somewhere around there. Anyway, same thing happened. Harold Smith comes to me. We're at the fights. And Harold Smith says to me, he says, Hector's not coming. And I thought he meant like Hector Valdez or somebody like, you know, I don't know, Hector who? He goes, Hector Camacho. I said, what do you mean? He goes, he ain't fighting. I said, what do you mean he ain't fighting? He goes, I got off the phone with him 5 minutes ago. He's all loaded at the hotel and he ain't going to fight. I said, before I can even interject, Harold says to me, if he don't show up, Pedro, nobody's getting paid. And I've been there for a month and a half promoting this, doing the TV production, the pre-broadcast production. I mean, I did all the publicity stuff as far as writing the press releases. I mean, I did it all there. I've been there like 6-8 weeks. I don't want to go home with nothing. I mean, what's my plane ticket going to look like? Is my plane ticket still good? Anyway, I get in a town car and go back to the hotel. Left my suit there, my suit jacket at the arena. Went to the hotel and Camacho don't want to come. I said, man, you got to come. I banged on his door, finally opened it up. He don't want to come. Cocaine on the table. He don't want to come. I said, oh, man, nobody's going to get paid. I said, you're screwing all these people over here in Puerto Rico. I said, you know what this is going to look like in the paper tomorrow morning? Hector Camacho, no show to fight. You know what it's going to look like in Puerto Rico, man? I said, you know, Trinidad, all these other guys, they never no showed anybody. Even Rosario, he was a heroin addict, didn't show no show on a fight. I said, you'll be put in a class all by yourself. I think he thought about that for a second. And then he went, snorted some more cocaine, and then he said, okay, let's go. And we went. And we went to the arena, and he fought Jorge Vaca, who basically is Scott Cuddy, but back in the day, I'm telling you, Jorge Vaca was like, he was a rough, tough dude. I don't know how he ever won a lot of fights because he didn't seem to have a lot of skill, but he was a rough, tough dude. And Vaca came out, he's got this face that looks like, you know, somebody's beat it with a baseball bat or maybe a pizza cutter or something like that. Just like, oh, he's a gnarly looking guy, okay? Vaca wouldn't be your first guy to pick to do any modeling, just put it like as far as his mug was concerned. I mean, he had a horrible looking face. I'm just being honest, okay? So, Vaca and Camacho come together. And I say to myself, how long is this gonna last? Well, not very long, because the first opportunity he got, Camacho tried to butt Vaca. And of course, Vaca, as I said, had all the scar tissue from bleeding before. So it was, you know, it's gonna happen. If he butts him again, it's gonna be over. Camacho butted him again in the second round. The fight was stopped. We all got paid, but the people got ripped off as far as the main event's concerned. Unless they were looking for just an appearance by the Macho Man, Hector Camacho, they got ripped off that night. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I mean, I was just glad I got out of town. And I remember getting on the plane. I got on a plane to go to, I was going to Colombia. I had something going on in Colombia. And, a couple stops in Colombia. So, I'm on the plane and I got like $8,000 in cash on me, and I had some other cash wired in, and I wired it for, you know, one of those, Instagram, some kind of stuff. Anyway, didn't want to carry more than 10 grand in cash on you when you're getting on a plane, right? So I get on a plane and we end up in Puerto Rico, and they end up saying this, you know, we want to check you. I said, what do you want to check me for? He goes, can you come off the plane? I said, what do you mean? The plane's about to take off. What are you talking about? Mr. Fernandez, can you come off the plane? We don't want to make a scene here. And when I'm an ex-cop, okay? When the cops say that to you, we don't want to make a scene here, that means we're about to beat your ass unless you get up and come with us. Okay? Yikes. So, I get up, I walk out to the run. They had to bring us outside the door, this and that, and the crew is like looking at us, you know, like, oh, this guy, is he an Arab? Is he a terrorist? Has he got a bomb? What's going on? Anyway, they get me out there in the alleyway, whatever it is between the plane and the airport. And they're saying to me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Colombia. He goes, why are you going to Colombia? I said, because I got a girlfriend there. I do some business in Colombia. We're in the boxing business. We've got boxing events in Colombia. He goes, what kind of money do you have on you? And I said to him, I mean, you got to be honest, right? I mean, I got $8,000 on me. $8,000? Where the hell did you get $8,000? I said, I just worked this TV event. I've been in this country for 2 months, 8 weeks. I worked the Camacho fight last night, a couple of nights ago, Baba and Barrel and Bayamón, Puerto Rico. I did the TV. I did the ring announcing. I did this and that. I did the publicity. But I've been here for a while. So anyway, they're hassling me, and I see the crew lady, you know, the head flight attendant. She's looking at her watch. She's looking at the custom guys. In other words, we're going to take off the plane. Are you going to let them on the plane or not? So they let me on the plane, and when I got back on the plane, everybody looked at me like I was Charles Manson, like I was going to bring down the plane. I mean, like I was a terrorist, like I was they just saw, all these people saw evil in me. Because let me tell you, when the cops come on the plane, when three cops come on the plane and tell you, you know, we don't want to make a scene, and everybody can hear that, we don't want to make a scene type of thing, that's usually the type of things they do with a real criminal. Not some ex-cop that's just on some TV in Puerto Rico. Of course, I have got some Puerto Rican blood in me, but that day, I wasn't proud to be a Puerto Rican because they dogged me. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And who dogged me? Puerto Rican custom officials. I kid you not. worked for the United States, but they were Puerto Ricans. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA, of course. Coming to you live from the Sports Byline Studios in the city by the bay, San Francisco, California, live on Twitch.tv. That's Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. I'm looking at the video right here. Of course, you can check us out live or delayed on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, 24/7. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Let's go down to the nightclub.
Down to the nightclub. Thank you, Pedro. You run tomorrow?
I'll be right. You gonna run tomorrow morning?
5:30.
I'm leaving tomorrow at 10. I'll run with you tomorrow morning.
Okay, babe. Okay.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
And weather the storm. He knows what it's like to have to weather an early storm. Look at this stuff.
Oh, what a set with the Jimbo on the back with Ray Mercer in his guard. They want to tap me out. Guillotine jump. Tap out win for Jimbo.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Make a million, lose a million. That's the way it goes.
How about make 200 million? Get your ass kicked. I'm talking about Conor McGregor. Of course, lost again, of course, to Dustin Poirier last night. Got his ankle broken at the end of the first round, the second round. And bottom line is the fight ended early. His ankle was broke. But, you know, when I look at Conor McGregor going into this fight, I saw an old drunk. That's what I saw. I saw an old drunk. I mean, his face, he never got really refined as far as being in condition is concerned. Because when you get in shape, the water comes out of your face and your bones start to stick out and this kind of stuff. In other words, some people look anorexic, okay, or drawn, okay, but you know you're in good shape. He didn't look that way to me. He looked like he was a drunken alcoholic, of course, that decided, well, I'm not going to drink that much for a while, and I'll just cut off for like 6 or 8 weeks, and, you know, as far as the booze is concerned, and I'll get myself together. And guess what? He didn't get himself together, because I said he didn't have any snap last night. He landed one decent punch, I thought, on Dustin Poirier in the first round. It was a right hand, I believe, a right hand lead or a right hand cross. But outside of that, he didn't do much. I'm talking about Conor McGregor. Of course, McGregor now 22-6. Of course, the man that made all that money with Floyd Mayweather a couple of years ago, that rip off, the heist that it was. But a lot of you boxing fans paid for that stuff. I mean, what can I say? It's spit with an H. That's what I thought it was. I mean, come on. Conor never had a professional boxing match. He had a couple of amateur boxing matches, and you could put him in there with the best fighter pound for pound. At one point in time in the world, in the minds of most, I'm not a Floyd Mayweather fan, so I've never thought he was the best fighter pound for pound in the world. I thought maybe he was the best boxer in the world at one point in time, but the best fighter? No. He's a couple letters short of spilling being a complete fighter, talking about Floyd Mayweather. Of course, Mayweather, the excitement stops when the bell rings. That's just the way it was. I'm going to knock this guy out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to destroy him. I'm going to hit him so hard his kinfolk, and Floyd would talk all that smack. But then when the fight started, Floyd would go into that safety first pedestrian type of style. And I understand why he did that, because his uncle, Roger Mayweather, of course, ended up like in a loony bin. He died like a year, less than a year ago. Of course, Roger was my buddy, a former WBC 140-pound champion, WBC 140-pound champion, and WBC 100, or WBA 130-pound champion. Of course, he skipped 135, the Black Mamba, but he was a hell of a fighter, no doubt about it, one big puncher. And we used to hang around together, and, you know, I used to ask him, what happened to the Chavez? I'll get to MMA in a minute. What happened in the Chavez fights? And he said, you know, Chavez just had this incredible will. He goes, I hit him with shots that other guys would just fall from. He goes, you know, you can feel it. When you hit somebody right and you can feel it, the groove is going on. You can feel it all the way up your arm, you know, probably up to your spine. But it wasn't happening for Chavez. Chavez had that iron chin. He wasn't going nowhere. So when Mayweather just couldn't knock him out like he had knocked everybody else out, eventually Julio Cesar Chavez got to him and won by stoppage. But at the end of the day, of course, Roger Mayweather ended up in a hospital. Wasn't able to talk. And of course, you know, I sort of saw the residual effects of boxing, maybe a little booze too, in the, I guess, 90s, when he and I were hanging around together in Vegas. Of course, I had my own little world down there in Las Vegas, and I was the spokesperson both TV and radio for the Imperial Palace Hotel and Casino. So I had the run of Vegas, no doubt about that. Anytime I wanted to go to town, I was there. And you know, Roger and I spent a lot of time going to clubs and this and that, having fun. I mean, we never drank. He never drank all that much. Never got loaded. Of course, he never got high or anything like that. Not in front of me. But the residual effects of boxing, you can see him take play, to see him take hold as he got tired. In other words, later in the day, in other words, he was like sharper in the morning than he was in the afternoon, and definitely sharper than he was at night. So you can see the residual effects of professional boxing and or anything else that might have been causing this to Roger Mayweather sort of take effect. And of course, Floyd Mayweather saw that. He was obvious. He was a witness to it. I mean, Floyd paid for his uncle's rehabilitation, not rehabilitation, his convalescent care. I mean, give Floyd props. He did pay for Uncle Roger Mayweather's convalescent care. As far as Mayweather being a trainer is concerned, I thought he was a good trainer. I don't think his brother, Floyd, the father of Floyd Mayweather Jr., I don't think he's a good trainer at all. I don't think so. I think he's all mouth and all hype. Anyway, Dustin Poirier, TKOs, Conor McGregor in the first round. It was a stoppage. Of course, as I said, a broken ankle. The co-feature, Gilbert Burns defeated Stephen, this Wonder Boy Thompson. Thompson not getting any breaks. It was a 29-28, 2-1 edge in rounds, 28-28 across the board. Of course, that was at welterweight, 170 pounds. The heavyweight fight, knockouts, you know, it usually happens in the heavyweight division. Tuai Tavazi, a Samoan dude, obviously, knocked out Greg Hardy in the first round, a minute and 7 seconds in. And I told you yesterday that Samoans win by early round knockouts. If you can take a Samoan just a little bit, you can just take them a little wide, take them deep into the first round. If it's a 5 minute round, take them deep into the first round and you'll get them to gas. They don't condition themselves. For some reason, aren't the cardio kings. They just aren't. I used to box this guy named Sonny Napopo. I hope Sonny's not listening, or may he rest in peace if he's passed away. But anyway, I used to box him here in the city, and I would watch him spar other guys, and he would light them up because he would get this close to him, and he would let the, you know, people would let him get that close. I never let him get that close. I used to, just rum on him, okay? But when he, in the first round, when he came out smoking, he came out smoking like Joe Frazier, okay? He came out smoking, I grab him and run him around and walk him back in this way. I'm not thinking any offense at all. I'm just thinking to myself, let's get him tired, okay? That's the way you do. When I was a cop out there in the patrol district, of course, I was like 155 pounds, and once in a while you'd have to rumble with a Samoan, you know. And this was before the days where cops shot first. And there was, I would be willing to fight somebody before I shot them. I mean, that was what I took to, that's part of the job. Nowadays, cops don't want to fight anybody. They just shoot you first. I mean, I kid you not. I mean, we can go on and on and on and on about police responses here in the country, whether it's with white people or black people or brown people. I'm just telling you, I think the police departments need to be reorganized, much like the fire departments were reorganized. Remember the fire departments? They used to answer only fire calls, right? I mean, here in San Francisco was the SF, the San Francisco Fire Department. They, nothing but fires, right? But now, the fires are like 8 to 10% of their calls, if that. All these calls now, they're for paramedics and lockouts and, you know, things like that. So the calls are not for fires per se. So the fire department has reassigned their guys and sort of retrained them to an extent because they're doing things other than putting out fires, because there's not too many fires. I mean, if you just had firemen putting out fires and not doing anything else, they'd be sitting around maybe 80, 90, maybe more than 90% of the time sitting in the station doing nothing. So what I'm trying to say is, being a former policeman, I think that the police departments need to be reorganized. The entire world of policing should be reorganized. And a lot should be go to, you know, you don't need to send, if you got a traffic ticket or something like that, I mean, like a parking ticket or you've got some at the house where you're going to tow somebody's car and this thing, you don't need to send a policeman out there, an armed policeman out there. You really don't. And it said, you know, and a lot of times when you're dealing with people that are mentally imbalanced, because that's what they don't train you for in the police academy. I kid you not. They give you, I think they gave us 4 hours of dealing with mental health people, 5150s, in other words, people that are out of their mind. They gave us 4 hours of that in the entire academy. It was a 19-week academy. They gave us 4 hours of that. And what did you deal with when you're on the street? Mental illness more than anything else. I don't know how I got off in that direction. Anyway, let's go back to the world of MMA. Tai Tuivasa was winner of Greg Hardy. Irene Aldana beat Yana Kunikea. That was a TKO in round number one. Of course, so that's good when the UFC's got a few knockouts there. Of course, the pay-per-view opening bout, bantamweight, Sean O'Malley came back and was a knockout winner in the third round with punches, TKO, over Chris Montefo. For the bottom line, Sean O'Malley is an exciting guy, no doubt about that. Carlos Condit lost in the prelims on ESPN. Some of the other guys who were on the prelims, not too many big names. In fact, I've told you before, the UFC is like hurting for talent. I mean, they made $290 million last year. $290 million last year. And speaking of that $290 million, guess how much bonuses they gave to the fighters? I told you it was 50 grand, right? Oh, so they heard me on the radio. They heard the fact that, you know, I've been screaming for about a couple of years now. 50 grand. Imagine this. Imagine this. You sell out Madison Square Garden. You sell it out. Masvidal did. Jorge Masvidal did with Nate Diaz. You say, because you can't sell the event out with one guy. You got to have two guys. Okay, there's got to be a big fight going on, right? So you sell. Masvidal sells out the MSG, the entire Garden, quickly, bang, like that. It's like $7 million gate, $8 million gate. He gets $500,000. He gets $500,000, and Danny gives him a $50,000 bonus. I kid you not. So these guys who made $290 million last year, that was the gross receipts for the UFC, $290 million, and 8 to 10% of that goes to the fighters. In other words, you got to listen, and I've said it before, I'll say it again. This is not pimping. If this was pimping and these were hookers and these were girls working the streets of San Francisco, my aforementioned position as a San Francisco policeman, having relationships or professional relationships with pimps and hookers, you couldn't get hookers to stay for 8 to 10 cents on the dollar. In other words, you told a girl, you know, go do a $100 favor there, and you're going to give her $10 or maybe $8. She ain't going to, how long do you think that's going to last before she's on a bus to Atlanta? Okay? Not very long. So how come Danny can get away with it? Well, he's the only big game in town. Unfortunately, nobody else is paying the money. I thought that Scott Coker was going to take over with Bellator and that Bellator would get the TV contracts and do all this kind of good stuff. And they just floundered. I think they missed the opportunity. There's no doubt about it. And of course, maybe COVID had something to do with that. You know, because COVID has sort of wreaked havoc on the world at large and the world of combat sports for sure, of course. But fights are coming together. They're putting people in butts and seats again. I don't know if that's that good, especially like if you're not – and people aren't getting vaccinated. I'll get to that, of course, Tyson Fury and those guys a little bit later. But the bottom line is right now the UFC is a successful enterprise. There's no doubt about it. But I got to say this. They're the – biggest pimps of all time, no doubt about it. Now, as far as boxing history is concerned, you know, I was thinking about my man Sugar Ray Robinson. Of course, my time I spent with him in 1984, June of 1984. We watched Roberto Duran get knocked out by Tommy the Hitman Hearns. It was a rough night for me. I mean, it just was. So anyway, Sugar Ray Robinson is staying across from me at the Aladdin Hotel, the old Aladdin Hotel, the one they imploded. Anyway, he's staying across from me and I'm like devastated. I mean, Duran just got destroyed by Tommy Hearns in the second round. Of course, Duran's my guy. You know that. Anyway, the reason why he got destroyed, he wasn't in shape. Duran was at one of those fights where, like Murray Merchant said, you know, he doesn't stay in shape two fights in a row. Of course, the previous fight was against Marvin Hagler in November of 1983, and he looked spectacular that night, going 15 rounds with Marvin Hagler, winning after 12 rounds, of course, losing by a point, I think in 2 points after 15 rounds. Of course, then, like Larry Merchant said, Duran doesn't stay in shape two fights in a row a lot of times, especially later in his career. And of course, the Tommy Hearns fight, I saw him at the, take that back, I was at the Western Olympic Trials in Colorado Springs in May of 1984, trying to get my spot on the Olympic team, the old dream, right? It didn't happen. Anyway, but Duran and Hearns came to town, so I called to prep for this fight. We used to have press conferences. They would take a tour, and they would get like a charter plane. Bob Arum or Don King would get on a plane with them, and he'd bring the fighters like Marvin Hagler and Ray Leonard. He'd like travel them to 8 or 10 cities. Now they do it by, virtual and this kind of good stuff because of the pandemic. But those press conferences, they used to rock and roll. We used to get all the big stars here in San Francisco. Why? Because Jack Fisk wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle, and he was the godfather of all the boxing writers. I think he wrote for like 40 years. He's a boxing Hall of Fame writer. I named my daughter after him. I was his, for lack of a better word, BA, you know what, itch. For a long time, I used to pick him up from work every night, five nights a week, whether he was late or not. I just had to sit out there and wait for him. He never paid for gas. How did I get into the Jack Fisk thing? Anyway, may he rest to be Jacob Finkelstein. Of course, he changed his name from Jacob Finkelstein to Jack Fisk because of the anti-Semitism he experienced at the University of Alabama. Guess who was at the University of Alabama when he was there? George Wallace, the former presidential candidate and the governor of Alabama. Of course, the guy that was very anti-segregation back in the 1960s. He was part of the boxing team along with Mills Lane. I take it at Mills Lane, that's right, and the University of Alabama. That's back in 1948, I believe. Just stretching my memories. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The late Rick Stevens. Check him out. One of the great soul singers of all time. You're Still a Young Man on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC. Oh, heart in hand.
And all these fighters that are, you know, they share in the revenue. They do share in the revenue. They have the upside in the pay-per-view, you know?
Mr. Dana White, wherever you are, I have a hit list, but I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
He didn't make any money. He decided to retire from the UFC. I kid you not. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look in the world of boxing, MMA, of course. Some other fights that took place this weekend. Sort of a slow weekend in the world of boxing. This was Bezerra Ramirez, the winner, of course, of a former WBO cruiserweight champion, 200 pounds, now dropping down to 175. He's 42-0 with 28 whacks. He took on Barrera Sullivan. Sullivan Barrera. And the bottom line is the best thing about Sullivan Barrera is, in fact, his name. He's got a great name. Outside of that, can't fight all that much. Went 12 rounds. I think he went 12 rounds with Andre Ward back about 10 or 12 years ago when Andre Ward was the king at 168 pounds. But since that, probably nothing as prone. But 22-4 now, 14 KOs. The fight took place in L.A. Zerto knocked him down with body shots. The fight was stopped in the fourth round. So you got to give him props. Manny Pacquiao looking good. Get himself together. Of course, the wild card gym. Freddie Roach's wild card gym there. And I think on, is it Hollywood Boulevard? What's the Sunset Boulevard down there in L.A., of course. What can I say? Manny Pacquiao, the icon, of course, going to hook it up with Errol Spence. Errol Spence is a very prohibitive favorite, like a 2.5-1, 3-1 favorite in the minds of some people. Yet, a lot of people give Manny Pacquiao a significant chance of winning this fight. I mean, why? Because like Socrates Palmer said yesterday, Boxing's PhD on the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. He's Manny Pacquiao. He's been known to pull off impossible stuff. I mean, the guy moved from 107 pounds, that's what he turned pro at, 107.75 pounds, and he fought world-class guys at 154, like 150 pounds, like a special cash weight in there between junior middleweight and welterweight. So what I'm trying to tell you is he's fought bigger guys. He's done a lot. Of course, I question the fact how he was able to do that. It was supernatural. I always say to myself, is he taking Flintstone vitamins or is he just Manny Pacquiao? Well, I guess maybe we'll never know on that one. Bottom line is Errol Spence and Manny Pacquiao in August on pay-per-view. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Lenny Williams taking this break, of course. Lenny Williams, former lead singer for Tower of Power. You can check him out. He's doing his own thing. Got a new drop. They call it Drop Cuddy. Cuddy says it's a drop. New album out. Check him out at LennyWilliams.com. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside. Look at the world of boxing, the MMA, of course. Hour number one come to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and a plethora of other internet channels. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stay tuned for hour number two after the news here on Sports Byline.